You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Got to look fastball first pitch. You can't get behind.
Oh, my goodness. Strikes out the side. Javier has struck out six in two innings. What a start for this guy.
He looks so animated, too.
Is that good? Six strikeouts in two innings. Is it? He was awesome last night, Christian Javier. 5 2/3 innings, 9 strikeouts on the game, 1 walk, 3 hits allowed. He struck out 6 of the first 7 he faced. He saw lots of whiffs, which is pretty awesome considering Cleveland, at least per whiff rate, was the best in baseball, I guess you would say. The least amount of whiffs. And he is the first Astros pitcher, per our guy Robert Flores, who joined us on Monday, to strike out 9 and walk 1. Or fewer in 2 straight starts since Garrett Cole in September of 2019. Do we say his name anymore? Do we acknowledge his time with the Astros, Garrett Cole? Were there fun memories along the way? Would you pull out a guitar and play Good Riddance by Green Day to a montage of Garrett Cole? Another turning point from the guy who wore Scott Boris' hat. I don't have any other lyrics for the song. I was thinking, no, he doesn't deserve a song. He doesn't deserve a tribute. But anyway, that is something that Garrett Cole had once did, and that is a very individual statistic. Good God, Patrick Beverley is back on television. I'm sorry, I am distracted by it. We got to stop this.
Is he wearing a bathrobe with, like, denim lining? Like,
it is something else, that is for sure.
And he has cursive written on his chest?
It says, like, medical.
It almost looks like, it says medication or something.
Medication. Yeah, this is, it's like if Chuck Norris decided to go and turn into, like, a sensei. You know, like, hey, I got this Canadian tuxedo underneath, but I got my robe on the outside.
And it's designed by Balenciaga or something. It's with a fashion twist.
I love Patrick Beverley. He was one of my favorite Rockets. This is too much. This needs to stop. What do you think he's saying right now? Because I'm assuming he has an axe to grind with the Golden State Warriors, right? There's no way that he likes them after some of the playoff matchups that they had. No way, right? Zero chance.
I don't know. Does he play it straight now, or is he like a full-on wrestling heel, like anyone who has a slight against, like, actually Steph Curry sucks?
The brand has been established. And you know what? I hope he's saying that right now. I hope he's saying that Steph Curry sucks. Not that I would agree with him, but I just want to be like, yeah, you know what? Steph Curry's baby, Riley, ugly. Hey, Steph Curry's wife, you know her? Not my cup of tea. You know Steph Curry's mom? Sup? I know you're single. Hey, what's going on?
So from reading closed captioning, he did give a lot of credit to Kevon Looney and Draymond Green. So maybe he isn't giving Steph credit.
Okay.
He's the key to the series. Kevon Looney.
Kevon Looney, yeah. It's some random player that Patrick Beverley can relate to somehow. Anyway, sorry. I was distracted by this. I had a question for you today, because Christian Javier's looked really good in his last 2 starts. He's only throwing essentially a fastball and a slider, and if you have that good of a combination, if you got to buy stock in any of these young Astros pitchers going forward, on a serious note, just based off of what the guy brings to the table and his age too, Javier's the one that I feel like you'd be buying in at the lowest with the highest upside. Because Framber Valdez, you've seen him pitch in the postseason, there's some inconsistency. I think the fact that he's 28 years old makes it a little bit tricky to buy stock with him. With Jose Urquidy, I believe he's 27 years old, so it's sort of the same thing where, hey, you like some of the stuff that he brings to the table. I'm not the biggest fan of the high Sox or number in the 60s, but okay. It's got to be probably between Luis Garcia, because Garcia's just a vibe with that haircut, and Christian Javier, at least for me. Good thing is, all of these guys, you think, will continue to improve and continue to get better. And I'm wondering what the next evolution is for Christian Javier. Because again, he's doing this with like 2 pitches for the most part. And he's getting people to whiff. What happens if he develops something else? I don't know if that's something that would take place by the end of this year. But I am very curious about what more he can add. He's only 25. And it's really nice that this injury to Jake Odorizzi has opened things up for Javier to get it. Because it's not like Odorizzi was pitching poorly. We had those two starts where we were like, okay, he can never pitch again. But ever since Odorizzi's leg was amputated, you know, just kidding. Ever since he was taken off the field on a stretcher, this has left an opportunity for Christian Javier, and he has made the most of it. And then you factor in the bullpen, too. The bullpen's been great. The bullpen last night, I mean, you know, Javier comes out outside of a wild pitch by, who is it, Hector Neris. Hector Neris, yes. He throws a wild pitch, so that's how the Guardians score their only run. But, I mean, really, like, they continue to pitch really well. When are the bats going to show up? I don't know. But the pitching has been stupendous. Something else Texans-wise I wanted to touch on, and look, you know, I'm just annoyed that Lovie Smith said that Davis Mills is already an excellent quarterback. I talked about that in the last segment, but some people are concerned already because they assume that anything that the Texans touch is going to get screwed up. It's just going to break. Derek Stingley, drafted third overall, a guy who has been battling injuries the last 2 years, maybe didn't really want it that much over the last 2 years after that amazing season that he had as a freshman in 2019 with the national champion LSU Tigers. People are wondering, okay, what will this iteration of the Texans do to potentially mess things up? And seeing him not out at OTAs due to an injury had some concern. Here's Lovie Smith weighing in on the injured Derek Stingley Jr.
We know he's coming off of a major injury. So for Derek and some of our other players, as you can see, we have quite a few guys that are out right now. Some are getting no reps. Some are getting a limited amount of reps, which we're doing with Derek and Kenyon and a few other other players.
Here's one of the perks of being a rebuilding team. And I know some people are going to be concerned about him not being out there. You're in no rush to get any of these guys out on the field. And on a season where you really have nothing to lose. No one has anything to lose this season, you know? Who's going to get fired after this year? Do you really feel like the Texans would even remotely consider firing Lovie Smith after firing David Culley after 1 year? No way. No one is getting canned or fired after this season. The only thing I could see potentially happening is Pep Hamilton getting a job elsewhere. You know, the offensive coordinator of the Texans. But with that in mind, any missed reps for young players, you know, TAs and mini camp and training camp, doesn't really matter. So I would tell those who are concerned about this with Derek Stingley Jr. to relax a little bit. Stingley is going to get trial by fire when the regular season begins. They are going to throw him out there, and that is where the most valuable experience he can get will be. Yeah, sure, like 7-on-7s and all the things that you see over the course of an offseason, they help. But as offseasons and practice seemingly becomes less and less important, this year is going to be all about having this guy 100% ready to go for the start of the year. And yeah, he's going to have to learn how to play defense for Lovie Smith, but there's no rush to have it right away. This team stinks. Don't get mad about someone that's potentially missing practices. Unless it's Laremy Tunsil. I think that's a bad look for Laremy Tunsil to miss practice. I do. You missed all those games last year. Okay, you're committed going forward with the team. How about a show of good faith, huh? I get it. They're voluntary. But Brandon Cooks is there. Where are you? 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Can you think of a reason as to why the Raiders decided to work out Colin Kaepernick? I have my theory. I think it's a bit of misdirection. From what? I'll tell you next.
ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Just me today. Vanessa's up in Indianapolis for the Indy 500. So, the Las Vegas Raiders brought Colin Kaepernick in for a workout yesterday. No word on whether or not he has signed with the Raiders. No word on how said workout went, but considering there had been workouts set up for him in the past that he decided to bail on at the last second, And considering he has been rather vocal this offseason about wanting to get back into the league, it is surprising that 6 years after he last played, 2016, that someone is thinking about this as an actual possibility. And all I can think of is why? And call me a cynic, but this is not being done out of the warmness of the Raiders' hearts. This is largely, I would imagine, not being done either as far as trying to find a viable starting quarterback, because the Raiders have one in Derek Carr. He played very well last season, especially towards the end. Now he has his buddy Devontae Adams with him. So I'm wondering why you would want to bring in a very notorious backup to the Raiders, especially considering how in the past Derek Carr has been especially sensitive to the idea that maybe John Gruden was trying to replace him. Carr's always been rather sensitive. You can just go through headlines. He has been asked point blank about his job status a lot. To his credit, he has answered honestly and with some emotion behind it. But also at the same time, you could make a strong argument, hey, you have to be playing better. That's why you don't have 100% job security. But it doesn't make sense in this situation to bring in Colin Kaepernick. So why are they doing it? Well, this has to do with something that took place 20 days ago. Dan Ventrell was the Las Vegas Raiders team president. And look, this is speculation on my end, but this is the only reason that this move makes sense. The Raiders are a mess, as they always have been, but much more so post Al Davis passing away. Mark Davis in charge. This is a team that still operates with paperwork for the records. This is still a team that operates, I think, also in a city where I think they're still trying to, you know, get back to or just ever be on the same level as some of these other teams when it comes to their cash flow. And they're hoping that being in Las Vegas with this brand new stadium of theirs, it's going to help them out. But they've been a mess. If you've paid attention over the last couple of years, all sorts of people in management have been canned left and right. And Dan Ventrell was their team president. He was fired in early May. And in a statement that was released on May 6th, he released a statement alleging he was fired in retaliation for bringing concerns by multiple employees about hostile workplace conditions within the Raiders organization. Quote, "I take that responsibility very seriously, which is why multiple written complaints from employees that Mark Davis created a hostile work environment and engaged in other potential misconduct caused me grave concern. When Mark was confronted about these issues, he was dismissive and did not demonstrate the warranted level of concern. Soon thereafter, I was fired in retaliation for raising these concerns. I firmly stand by my decision to elevate these issues to protect the organization and its female employees." The Raiders didn't say, meanwhile, why Ventrell was let go when they announced his departure earlier that day. The NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy had said at the moment that the league became aware of these allegations and took them very seriously, said that they will promptly look into the matter. But apparently it has to do with Mark Davis perhaps sexually harassing. What a surprise. NFL owner doing that. Jerry Richardson did it. Daniel Snyder did it. I'm sure others have done it, and people have not had others step up, talk about it to someone higher up the food chain, probably because they're scared that they would potentially get fired. So anyway, bringing it back to Colin Kaepernick, the only reason I can think of the Raiders bringing in Colin Kaepernick for a workout, call me a cynic, is because they're trying to distract people from this. They don't want anybody to continue to focus on that. They want everyone to get distracted by the fresh meat in front of them. That is how things work in politics these days. That is how everything works these days. Hey, is something going on that I don't want to be focused on? Hey, are my emails being investigated? Well, there are some emails that are being investigated that have to do with John Gruden maybe saying some racist and homophobic things. I'm going to focus on those things. And by the way, what's interesting about that is that the NFL has found out that they're going to court over John Gruden's emails against that saw him fired. And Gruden seems like he is just going scorched earth against the NFL. So we're going to see, I think, some very interesting things in the near future. And I want to get a feel from you guys at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. When John Gruden and the NFL go head-to-head and all sorts of juicy details about probably other teams are released in court, what teams that we have not heard about do you feel like are going to get thrown into the fray as far as being teams that are doing things that they shouldn't because a lot of stuff's going to be made public, and it's going to be glorious. But before we get to that, I saw this. This is just absolute bummer of a news story. Ray Liotta, for those who remember him, this was the lead actor on the movie Goodfellas. He passed away at 67 today. And the announcement per Deadline, he doesn't say what took place, but awful, right? I mean, when I think of Ray Liotta, I just think of the best mob movie of all time. And I know some people are going to say Godfather Part 2. Goodfellas is the best one. And for, you know, those who might remember him playing Henry Hill, a rat, essentially, because he got on the cocaine based off of the movie if you watched it. This is a little clip of Henry Hill in Goodfellas.
Didn't matter. Didn't mean anything. When I was broke, I would go out and rob some more. We ran everything. We paid off cops. We paid off lawyers. We paid off judges. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. And now it's all over. And that's the hardest part.
Today everything is different. I really like this movie because it goes so damn fast. And I think what Scorsese was trying to do with the movie was to just portray that life in the mob is not glamorous. Godfather and Godfather Part 2, it is portrayed as that, and it's a lot easier in those two movies to side with Michael Corleone, I think. Now, as Godfather 2 progresses and you realize he's like alienating himself from more and more people, okay, you start to turn against him a bit. But in Goodfellas, I just feel like they did a fantastic job of saying, like, okay, this is why the life is so intoxicating, and this is also why so many guys ultimately end up getting whacked, if you will. And I thought he did a fantastic job of playing Henry Hill, who is at one point this lively, vivacious, you know, young mobster who's got the world, you know, in his hands. And then as the movie goes on, you know, you're seeing him spiral and turning into this drug addict and this paranoid person who ultimately has to go into witness protection after ratting on all of his friends. That is the mafia. That's the real take on the mafia. So it's a shame. And Ray Liotta passed away at 67 years old. Hell of a movie. If you haven't seen it already, now you really got to watch it. It's really, I think it's the best mob movie that there is. You can make a case for some other ones. Donnie Brasco is pretty good. Bronx Tale. There's some other ones too, but this one's the best. Goodfellas, everybody. RIP to Ray Liotta. I'm Paul Gallant. It is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Vanessa and Gallant. I am really curious to see what's going to take place in this situation where the Las Vegas Raiders are basically fighting with the league to check that. John Gruden is fighting with the NFL, and the NFL is fighting to make sure that nothing gets out into the open. The NFL's motion to compel the John Gruden lawsuit into arbitration has been denied. And basically, Mike Florio had a write-up about this for Pro Football Talk, and he knows way more about legal stuff than I'll ever know. But Florio said essentially that if a judge shows up at a hearing to dismiss some sort of appeal, this is the equivalent of like a middle finger being shot the way of one of the parties in court. And that's what happened. And the NFL is going to try to appeal this, and they're going to try their hardest to make sure that none of this stuff sees the light of day. But in a situation where an investigation into workplace misconduct, sexual harassment, all of these things, in a situation where people want to get to the bottom of that, people want Daniel Snyder out, and also where you have a guy in John Gruden who has bleep you money. Gruden was an NFL analyst on ESPN for years. He was a head coach for years. He has made a ton of money over the course of his career. Hell hath no fury like someone scorned. This is a guy who is going to go all the way against the NFL. And I feel like along the way, he is going to unveil lots of secrets. Maybe this is me being wishful, being the king of wishful thinking. Go West. Maybe this is me hoping, but I just think that this is a perfect situation to see the NFL get embarrassed. And while I love the NFL and the football that is actually played, I much more so love to see some of these teams and some of these rich people that are in charge of these teams but still have the balls to make you pay an arm and a leg to go sit up in the 300 level of a stadium that they probably had you fund for them with taxpayer money. I love watching some of these people get embarrassed. I really do. So I'm hoping that John Gruden's going to kick up a hornet's nest. And I want to know, who do you think that we did not know to be a, let's just say, that we did not know to be a mess? What NFL team is perhaps going to get exposed? What team have you always thought, this team is doing a lot of shady stuff behind the scenes? I know some people are going to say the Patriots. That's already been out in the open, you know? Cowboys or something like that. But we know the Raiders are a mess right now. We know the Washington Commanders are a total mess right now. Who else is going to get kicked into this? I have a theory. I want to hear yours. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. So what NFL team has the most hidden dirty laundry? And also, we're going to try a new segment. It's Thursday. Let's do a little throwback Thursday. I'm going to try to force some historical references into some sports takes. Don't go anywhere. Vanessa and Galan, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN. 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Galant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Galant.
No, Vanessa, she's up in Indianapolis. I am Paul Galant. Fight, 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 squab. Squab, squab, squab. Hey, you want to watch the fight on Saturday? Yeah, that fight. You know what I'm talking about. Where you've got two guys, but one victor. Gervonta Tank Davis, Rolando Romero. It's on Showtime at 8 Central. Guess what? Caller number 3 to 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You're going to get a promo code so you can watch that bad boy for free. Hell yeah. And listen, Gervonta Tank Davis. The nickname Tank is because he knocks everyone out like a Panzer. Or maybe a Sherman. The Shermans actually were better in World War II, even though there was a lot that went into the making of the actual German Panzer tanks. And those were the ones that really revolutionized the war. Anyway, caller number 3 to that number. So best of luck in the war against the phone lines to come. There are two organizations that I want to see exposed in this John Gruden versus the NFL. Let's be honest, bleep show. Because the NFL didn't have to do this, but they tried to protect Daniel Snyder for reasons that make no sense, unless they're just scared that if they don't stand up for one of their fellow owners, that they might be next. This is a pretty easy guy to get rid of. He has ruined the Washington football team, the Washington Commanders. He has ruined them. And yet they thought, you know what? Let's misdirect everybody. Much like the Raiders might be misdirecting from their own improprieties with this Colin Kaepernick workout. Hey, don't look at the vice president we fired who was talking about workplace misconduct with our owner. Don't look here. We're working out Colin Kaepernick. Get mad. Get happy. Whatever. In this other situation, John Gruden's emails were, for some reason, the major finding of the investigation into Daniel Snyder's emails. So Gruden's got a real case against the NFL. I want to see what they find about other teams. The Miami Dolphins are the one that I want to see stuff found out about. Because Stephen Ross and the Dolphins, they are, first off, a poorly run organization. But second, they do all sorts of shady things. Allegedly tanking, trying to tamper with Tom Brady. There's a lot of things that they have done, and I want to see all of it out in the open. Because it's an organization that does not get nearly enough guff for how bad they have been over the years, for how bad they've been in a post-Dan Marino world. And we're talking about an organization that, much like Washington, was for the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, at least the early part of it, you know, we're talking about like one of the more successful organizations in the league. And then all of a sudden, they just hit a wall, Dan Marino leaves, and they have been a joke ever since then, in my opinion, at least. And one of the reasons that it's been so easy for New England to win year in, year out. They've had a couple of nice years, but for the most part, I mean, a mess of an organization. They even got rid of their iconic look. So I want to see what is found out about Miami. Obviously, we would all love to see whatever dirt is spilled about the Dallas Cowboys. I honestly don't think that there's going to be that much with the Houston Texans that would be found in an investigation into the Washington Commanders. That's just me. But how about the Giants? Everyone thinks of the Giants as this just regal institution as a part of the NFL. And I've never understood it. Now, part of it has to do with the fact that everything in New York is, for whatever reason, put up on a pedestal when it comes to sports. Like, the New York Knicks are thought of as this iconic basketball franchise, even though they have done nothing since the 70s. Nothing. They are a nobody franchise. Everyone talks about Madison Square Garden. Cool. It's an old basketball arena. Congratulations. History. The Garden, bro. You've done nothing. The New York Giants are put on a similar pedestal. And look, they had some really good years in the 80s. The early 90s, that defense that they had with Lawrence Taylor, great. Obviously, too, in the early 2010s, the late 2000s, they had their two Super Bowl runs. But what have they done? You know, they had a couple of good years. They had the Super Bowl appearance in 2002 against the Baltimore Ravens. They've made it to the Super Bowl a couple of times. But for the most part, over the last 30 years, they have stunk. And yet, there is this air that they carry themselves with as if their bleep don't stink, despite hiring bad coach after bad coach after bad coach. They hired Pat Shurmur voluntarily. They hired Joe Judge. They hired Ben McAdoo. Like, they've hired some real nobodies. They never get called out on it. The Jets are their crosstown rivals. Yes, everyone thinks the Jets are a joke. Why do the Giants always go scot-free? They drafted Daniel Jones. I want to see stuff behind the scenes get exposed with them. I feel like they'd be able to find something. So anyway, there you go. That's what I'm hoping to find out. Okay, guys, I wanted to introduce something because I am a history nerd. Called Throwback Thursday on Thursdays. And, you know, this is somewhat appropriate because this is the first thing I think about when I think of Dan Pastorini. But it is Dan Pastorini's birthday. Happy birthday to Dan Pastorini, who is a good dude. I've always been very friendly with me. He was, of course, the starting quarterback of the Houston Oilers back in the 1980s during the Love You Blue era, the late 70s. And whenever I think of Dan Pastorini, I think of one play. A play that should have been, but a play that wasn't. And I think last night where you have, I believe, the first base umpire in the Astros-Guardians game. It's so weird saying Guardians. Struggling the way that he did where he missed like three clearly safe calls that had to be overturned on replay. That we have perhaps the worst moment in Houston sports history that was entirely a byproduct of there not being replay. It's when Dan Pastorini found Mike Renfro in a playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers for what should have been a touchdown.
And here's the quick shot as they throw it out to the far side, and it is cut out of bounds.
I think he had 2 feet in. I got to say what I'm seeing. And he scored a touchdown on that.
I see 2 feet in. Renfro is upset. Nobody has called the play. Spot where an instant replay would be important.
Let's see if the feet come down. Now he's got the ball. He does clearly get inside.
It is a touchdown.
No question about it.
That's the 1979 AFC Championship game, and at that moment it was the end of the third quarter, and Pittsburgh was up 17-10, and it should have been 17-16 after that catch. It's clearly a touchdown. Like, there's no debating it. And it led to the advent eventually of instant replay and replay review in sports. It took a while for that to be fully implemented. I want to say it was like 98, 99. It was like a touchdown that Vinny Testaverde ran for a touchdown where his head was in the end zone against the Seattle Seahawks or something like that. And that's what led the next year to instant replay being a part of the league. But in that game, I mean, Mike Renfro leapt over a Steelers defensive back, caught the ball, got both feet down, should have been a touchdown. And who knows what happens in that game? You know, if you talk with Dan Pastorini and you talk with any of those Oilers from the Love You Blue days, they'll tell you that, like, those games against the Steelers were just bloodbaths, absolute violent wars. What would have happened? They would have gone to Super Bowl 14 if they win that game. Houston has a championship. You think that the Oilers would have left town if they had a Super Bowl? Never won anything. Did get far. I mean, at least got to the conference championship game, something the Houston Texans haven't done. But anyway, it's Dan Pastorini's birthday. Sorry to, I guess, bring up probably the worst memory of Dan Pastorini's career up on his birthday, but that's what I thought of. Also, this took place on May 26th of 1987. This is like an all-time bleep up. I'm trying to think of one similar in my time covering Houston sports. You could say entire games for James Harden in the playoffs. You could say maybe when Jacoby Jones muffed that punt in the Texans-Ravens playoff game during the 2012 playoffs where the Ravens, they would go into the AFC Championship game, and then I think the Patriots beat them in that one. But in this one, heck, actually, check that.
The Ravens won the Super Bowl in 2012.
They did. This is 2011.
Yeah, it was the year 2011. Before.
It was the year before. Thanks for that. I was like, wait, what? But anyway, May 26th of 1987. This is one of the all-time bleep-ups in sports history. It's never talked about enough. And honestly, if Isaiah Thomas of the Detroit Pistons had never won a title, he would be looked at the same way that Chris Paul is, especially right now where Chris Paul and the one-seed Suns are out of the playoffs. Because this moment is just like an iconic bad one. It took place in game six of the 1987 Easter, excuse me, game five of the, thank you, Sean. I don't know any of the data. Game five of the 1987 Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and Pistons.
Drives around him, goes on in, and the ball gets knocked out of bounds by eight. Oh, they call it the other way. And now there's a steal by Bird. Underneath the DJ, lays it in. Right at 1 second left. What a play by Bird. Bird stole the inbounding pass. Laid it up to DJ. DJ laid it up and in. And Boston has a 1 point lead with 1 second left. Oh, my, this place is going crazy.
It's Johnny Most, the Celtics broadcaster on the call. Johnny Most was basically just chain-smoking cigarettes over the course of a broadcast, which is why his voice sounds like that. If you listen to broadcast calls that he had, I think with the Havlicek steals the ball call from like a decade earlier, he sounds a lot more like professional. But for anyone who maybe has had grandparents who smoked, like my Nana, she smoked like a chimney, and sadly she passed away from it eventually. But I remember whenever she would talk to us, it's like a little 5 foot nothing lady who was always drinking Bud Heavies and smoking Marlboros. Hey, Paulie, it's great to see you. Merry Christmas, kiddo. Go into the other room and see if we got any presents out there. Like, sounds like that. That was Johnny Most, the guy on the call for the Celtics. But that was an all-time screw-up by Isaiah Thomas. Like, just careless. What are you thinking? Gets stolen on an inbound pass by, of all people, Larry Bird, who's like lying on the sidelines on his stomach so that his back would like work because his back was like just a scoliosis mess or whatever it was. It was an all-time mess up. And I'm trying to think, like, there hasn't been something quite like that in Houston sports history, right? Like, I don't know, maybe the decision to leave Will Harris in the 2015 ALDS against the Royals, but that's not, you know,
that's a manager decision,
right? That's not like a just complete bleh. Maybe missing 27 threes in a row in the 2018 Western Conference Finals by the Rockets would qualify or something like that. I don't know if you can think of one. 713-780-3776. It's called Throwback Thursday. It's a working title. I was going to try to force some, like, historical references in on you. Like, hey, what's the equivalent of the Battle of Dunkirk in sports these days? Because the evacuation of Dunkirk started today. Did you know that? I was going to try to force sports history into sports references. I don't know if I could have thought of that one on the fly, though.
What, the modern-day Dunkirk? We couldn't come up with modern-day Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, that's true.
You'd think...
Yeah, we didn't really think this one all the way through. Working title.
Half-baked.
Half-baked Throwback Thursday. Someday it'll be fully baked. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, we've got a little something that we like to call a garbage time to wrap up the show. And in garbage time, there's a new cereal in town. It is absolutely disgusting, but it's fine. It's meant to normalize a very important conversation at the breakfast table. You'll hear what it is next.
ESPN
97.5.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Okay, so yesterday you heard some audio of San Francisco 49ers defensive tackle Javon Kinlaw going on a podcast with Grant Cohn, who is a 49ers reporter. Grant Cohn is not exactly the best of friends with a lot of San Francisco 49ers players. Some have taken issue with him. And he did, I guess, earlier in the week have some piece about how Kyle Shanahan is like a coward, doesn't know how to make decisions. I don't know if he said coward as far as the actual label with which he gave Shanahan. But it was one of those things where he criticized him. And apparently, there was a moment during practice on Tuesday where Javon Kinlaw came up to Grant Cohn, bumped into him, and knocked Cohn's hat off. So then Kinlaw came on Cohn's podcast, and we learned that Javon Kinlaw has bigger balls than Grant Cohn, at least per Javon. And a couple other things, too, Sean. In a nutshell, I mean, what all was it that we got out of Javon Kinlaw against Grant Cohn? There was the balls. My balls are bigger than yours. I don't bleep with you.
No, nobody bleeps with you.
Right. There was.
You're a little.
Put some respect on my name.
You're a little D word.
Yes.
N word.
Yes.
There's another one too.
It was, you know, pretty entertaining.
Comprehensive, I'd say too.
Very comprehensive. So he was on another podcast recently, and this is, I guess, his follow up to his verbal beatdown of one Grant Cohn.
I think that's a good point because, again, we only watch what happens on Sundays. A lot of people who are fans of teams, I think they forget that there's a human underneath that helmet.
Hey, it's all
good. What is that like when those two worlds collide?
It's good because I'm not a human anyway, so it's good, you know?
What are you?
I'm a barbarian. I'm not from here for real. I just live here. So, you know,
that's I'm a barbarian, dude.
Yeah, I just live here.
Someone print that. That's fire, dude. I love that.
Oh my God, the interviewer.
He must have been the most terrified interviewer on the face of the planet. Where it's like the next day, I'm interviewing the guy who just went on like a 3-minute rant against the last guy who interviewed him.
Clearly, based off of the tone, Sean, I'm guessing that this interviewer did not like Grant Cohn particularly. Seems like he is a little bit more pro player, I gotta say. Yes, there is an element of sometimes where fans take it a little bit too far, way too far, with criticisms of players. But the way that he led that question, like, sometimes fans forget you're a human. Do you like that? And then he goes, yeah, I'm not a human. I'm a barbarian, bro. Well, you're not a very good barbarian. That's what I'm trying to say here. Kinlaw had like a sack and a half last season. Didn't play much. Injuries? What has the cause been? I don't know. But the 49ers thought they were going to be able to replace DeForest Buckner with him. And clearly, they haven't. DeForest Buckner now with the Indianapolis Colts. He's been pretty damn good with them. So when you see Kinlaw talking and chirping and being the way that he is, okay, it's entertaining, that's for sure. But if you keep on doing this and calling more and more attention to yourself, what do you think the 49ers are going to do going forward? It's really my big question to him. Like, what do you think they think about you, an underachieving first-round pick that's been as vocal as he's been, and I would say downright hostile as you've been with the people that are supposed to, you know, be objectively talking about you? You're making it hard for them to even think about the idea that, hey, you could ultimately live up to your potential. This is advice right here. I'm not saying that that's going to determine what happens the rest of your career. All I'm saying is, if you want to have any benefit of the doubt as a former first-round pick, you got to play a little bit of politics here. And I feel like if this was George Kittle coming after Grant Cohn, or this is Deebo Samuel, or any of the many 49ers who are good players, Nick Bosa, you, okay, are going to have everyone on your side. You're just calling attention to yourself here. I have never heard a damn thing about Javon Kinlaw, the football player, in the NFL. I haven't. I have seen this. I have been entertained by this. But you're not a Twitch streamer. You're a defensive tackle. So, just saying, you call attention to yourself like this, be prepared for extra criticism of you and perhaps a little bit less of a desire to resign you from the 49ers when your contract eventually comes up. All right, it's that time of the show, 11:52. Time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
There is a new cereal in town. And this cereal has been designed. Why? It's been designed to normalize conversations about that time of the month at the breakfast table. It's called Period Crunch. Yes. And the cereal, it's red.
Of course, it had to have been red.
And it's uterus shaped. So you want to have conversations about that time of the month at the table? Now you can. I saw this at first. I thought for sure, this is a hoax. This is a scam. This is a prank. But the article in the Daily Mail, make womb for breakfast. Uterus-shaped cereal aims to normalize conversations about period at the breakfast table. Intima developed Period Crunch to encourage families to discuss periods. Raspberry-flavored cereal resembles the entire male reproductive system. It's a Swedish company, and it claims conversations about periods are not truly normalized. Well, you know where it shouldn't be normalized? At the breakfast table. The last thing that anyone should want to talk about at the breakfast table, in no particular order, are number two, number one, puke, boogers, other fluids, and periods. Aren't those all out of bounds? Aren't those the things that we have all agreed on as being out of bounds at the table? What is the point of this?
It is so red. I'm looking at these.
It's really red.
And you know how Cocoa Pebbles and Cocoa Crunch, or
when you put milk in the cereal?
Yeah, and at the end of the, it's all chocolate milk. Yeah. This one's going to be.
It is raspberry flavored. I mean, so it's got that going for it.
Yeah, I wonder how good is it? What if it's the best cereal in the world, but no one buys it? Or very few people buy it because they're scared to normalize periods.
It's just gross. Sorry. Look, I'm all for normalizing conversations about it. Can we just not do it over breakfast?
At 7 in the morning?
7 in the morning. All right, time for some Period Crunch, baby. Jesus. All right, what else do we got in garbage time? I think that's about as rock bottom as we can get to open it up. There's some controversy right now over the most recent Jurassic Park movie. I did not know this. Did you know that Laura Dern, the actress who played the female lead in the original Jurassic Park, did you know she was 23 and that Sam Neill was 43 when that movie came out?
That's crazy.
That is surprising. I would have never guessed that Laura Dern was 23 when that movie came out. She looks, no offense to her, a little bit older than that, which isn't a bad thing. But they were in the midst of a relationship. It's like the hot professor and the young co-ed, which is totally inappropriate. Well, now there's a headline saying Laura Dern says 20-year age gap with Sam Neill felt completely appropriate 30 years ago. Who is looking this up? Wait a second. Were those two 20 years apart? They didn't look it. They honestly didn't look it.
And it wasn't mentioned whatsoever that she was like a student or something. Because if you're 23 years old, in the especially in the paleontology field, a field I know nothing about, I imagine you're still in school if you're 23.
Probably.
There has to be some sort of post-grad thing going on there.
Right, Sean. She's probably getting a doctorate of some sort.
Or like...
Master's?
Yeah, or you have to like time in the field so you're like apprenticing or something.
Listen, guys, we can't put restraints on love, okay? We're not talking about a high schooler or something creepy like that. We're talking about a 20-year age gap. And I just can't believe somebody decided to look this up. I can't believe in a movie that was 30 years ago that Laura Dern was hooking up with somebody who's 20 years older. Maybe I'm just used to it, though. There once was a time after my parents split up where my dad was dating someone who was 28, very attractive. And I was like, damn it, I can't get with anybody. And here's my dad rolling around with this tall, hot model. What's going on here? Anyway.
I feel like that's a conversation for a different crowd.
Yeah, therapist? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, that's going to wrap up today's edition of Vanessa and Gallant. No Vanessa. Tomorrow, going to be an extra long version of Vanessa and Gallant. Josh Beard is going to rejoin me, my old co-host from my Gallant at Night days. So long. Farewell. Big thanks to Sean Mapes behind the glass. Have yourselves a wonderful Thursday. You'll hear us tomorrow at 10.
You gonna answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.